The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So good morning again. After our meditation together, now turning to the perfections of energy and patience. So far, we've been practicing these paramis, the perfections, step by step. First we had a discussion about dana, giving. And one who practices dana learns a one kind of letting go that initiates this path of the perfections. And then one's sila, their virtue, their ethical conduct matures. And we grow in this sort of ethical sensitivity, sensitive to the ouch and the ah of our actions. And then we practice wise renunciation, seeing more and more clearly those states and actions and cravings and clingings that no longer serve us. And then desire, compulsive desire, lets go. And then one grows wise about distinctions and perspectives that support liberation. And in doing so, we learn where to direct the effort of our practice, our energy. And this brings us to Urya. So these last 2 days, we focused a lot on some of the basic principles of parami practice. And we've reflected on this approach of reflecting on the benefits of a quality of a parami, and reflecting on the drawbacks of the opposites. I think this has a basis in the Dhammapada, one of these well-known teachings. Doing no evil, engaging in what's skillful, and purifying one's mind. This is the teaching of the Buddhas. So today, I plan to highlight a little bit, something a little bit different, which is how paramis work together. And I want to share this from the perspective both of our meditation practice and daily life. Appropriately, the very next line in the Dhammapada, after this is the teaching of the Buddhas, is patient endurance is the supreme austerity. So immediately, patience and energy are named. So I mostly want to talk about how virya, energy, and patience work together. And then why is that? What I've noticed over the years of this kind of wild monastic, semi-monastic, and lay Dharma life is that for a practice to be nourished and balanced long-term, this relationship of energy and patience points to some of the central concerns. Tenisiro Bhikkhu, in his essay, The Joy of Effort, begins the discussion of energy this way. He says, when explaining meditation, the Buddha often drew analogies with the skills of artists, carpenters, musicians, archers, and cooks. Finding the right level of effort, he said, is like a musician tuning a lute. Reading the mind's needs in the moment, to be gladdened, to be steadied, or inspired, is like a palace cook's ability to read and please the taste of a prince. So we may think of energy as something we have, something we hold on to, and something we give over, like it's a discrete quantity, or that it's something we have to muster when there is none, when we're depleted. But what does it do to reframe the idea of energy as something we tune and we attune, both to the appropriate level and to the needs of the moment? So in the suttas, in the Anguttara Nikaya, there's this very well-known story that Tenisiro Bhikkhu is referring to here called Sona, the Sona Sutta. Sona is an ardent, energetic practitioner who is pouring himself into his sitting and walking practice as a monastic. And he is discouraged. He's been practicing diligently, but he's not free. He's not free, and he is considering giving up the training. So the Buddha goes to question him. And he says, Sona, when you were a householder, were you skilled in playing the lute? Yes, Bhante, I was. If you tuned the strings too tightly, did the lute tune and play? No, Bhante, it didn't. And how about if you tuned the strings too loosely, would the lute tune and play? Oh, no, it wouldn't. And then the Buddha asks him, so when you tuned the strings neither too tightly nor too loosely, then did the lute tune and play? And the Buddha concludes, in the same way, Sona, over-aroused persistence leads to restlessness. Overly slack persistent leads to laziness. Thus, you should determine the right pitch for your persistence and attune the pitch of the other faculties to pick up your theme. Something I'd like to highlight this morning is, what's the opposite of energy? What's the opposite of energy? And I'd like to say it's not rest. I believe that sometimes the most appropriate attunement of energy is to rest. Maybe to overstate this, I could say that the paramis of energy and patience could be considered the paramis of our times. And we can think about this in terms of the maybe incessant demands on our energy. Maybe this comes in the form of compulsive activity or overwork. Rest is necessary for the path to develop long term. I think here of the cycles of a fruit tree over the seasons. When the season turns cooler and the days get shorter, and the tree draws its energy back into the trunk and into the roots, in a sense to hibernate before the sap and all of the biological processes sort of initiating energy back outward, and then leafing, flowering. One Dharma teacher described the intention of a sabbatical as to lie fallow. They want to add to restore and rejuvenate and replenish. So rest is really necessary in supporting our Dharma practice long term. This is the parami of patience in the form of time and non-exertion. So this is another way that energy and patience seem to work together. And we played with this some during our meditation, with the inhale, the energy coming up, the exhale, the energy settling back down. And this is another natural cycle of the paramis, energy and patience. In meditative terms, as the Buddha put it, the over-application of energy can incline us to restlessness and agitation. And then attuned energy can be a condition for the arising of joy and rapture, and leading onward to happiness and concentration and beyond. So sort of skillful tuning of the energy that I'm emphasizing a lot this morning, something that Suzuki Roshi called adjusting the flame of our energy. That's adjusting the level of effort just to suit the moment, just to suit this mind and this activity. The question I hear a lot, how much effort should I apply? It's almost never a question of one prescription. It's a matter of discernment. What's appropriate? When discussing virya, Dhammapala tends toward the heroic. You can imagine him talking about uninterrupted effort for four eons with the compassion for all beings. And this can be inspiring if we're receptive to it or in the right frame of mind or something. But it can also be discouraging, like Venerable Sona that may come across as impossible or not realistic. One of these ways that energy or aspiration can lose its balance is if our aspirations become demands on the universe. Practicing the paramis in order, however, sort of hedges this problem, where our dana, our giving, our ethics, our renunciation, and our wisdom support us in knowing how to attune our effort. This practice is a marathon, not a sprint. So we tune our inspiration. So in everyday practice, I think it's very important to have energy's partner, patience. One of the most interesting teachings from Dhammapala on this is that the proximate cause of patience isn't what I expected. I imagined it to be like force, endurance. It was seeing things as they are. The proximate cause of patience is seeing things as they are. And in many of the Buddhist teachings, seeing things as they are, it's an insight that comes through sustained practice, sustained observation. We see something in a new way, freed of our misperceptions. Wisdom is a cause for patience rather than force. So among other modes of wisdom, one of them is noticing that we are not in control of reality. Doesn't that influence our sense of patience or impatience? But we're not in control of this reality. This body ages, pleasant sound fades, a desire of mine doesn't manifest. This person next to me in traffic, you can fill in the blank. We're not in control of reality. Instead, our role as practitioners, you hear this again and again, is to contribute conditions. We contribute conditions to a complex system of reality and experience. In one of the most most clear examples that comes to mind for me now is the Buddha taught how the when and the where of karmic fruition, how our actions have effects in the future, the when and the where of how that will happen, it's nearly unknowable by anyone but the Buddha. But he strongly emphasized that we be circumspect in our action. So we can't know how the effect will necessarily ripple out for the future, but take great care with your action nonetheless. So our role is short of omniscience and total control, but we contribute conditions of our intentions, our actions, our skillful means, our compassion. And that sort of perspective supports the perfection of patience. Dhammapala also characterized patience in a way that was much more powerful than I was used to thinking. So he describes it as a strength, a supreme source of constancy, a shore bounding the great ocean of hatred, an unimpeded instrument in the development of noble qualities. And also, we know how patience affects the way people see us. If we respond to them with patience, that affects the interaction. In this way, Dhammapala calls patience an adornment, the basis of a good reputation, and has the function of quelling hatred. One part that he teaches that I think is well worth our consideration is that patience has the function, it has a realm. It's an appropriate response to other people's anger. So based on Dhammapala's emphasis in this and our current social scene, I think this is another way that patience and energy could be considered the paramis of our times. His counsel is to have a number of wise reflections available to you to use on the spot when facing others' anger. And they tend to fall into the categories of making it impersonal, maybe by reflecting on the fact that the sense faculties will necessarily experience pleasant and unpleasant. So we can expect to encounter unpleasant. And one of my favorites, reframing our perspective of the other person. And I think of the wisdom of parents in this regard, because the reflection is to see all beings as my own children. And I think of all of the wise restraint and patience that a parent sometimes cultivates. So in practicing patience with our energy, we reclaim some of the power that's lost to impatience. We have agency because of a patient perspective and can then employ a skillful, attuned response in the moment. Patience allows us the wise direction of our effort. So I think for today, as we're coming to the end of our time, you can take into your practice for Wednesday. Where is energy showing up? Where is effort and persistence showing up? And where is its opposite showing up? Maybe sloth, torpor, slackness. And then where is patience showing up? Where's endurance, forbearance, steadiness, that adornment of patience? And where's its opposite showing up? And then particularly for today, how do these two support each other? How do energy and patience support each other in your own life? Thank you for sharing some time in the practice this morning. May all beings benefit. And we'll pick up the thread tomorrow with the next two perfections. Thank you.